This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, efforts by international organizations to help the victims of Saturday's tsunami in Indonesia. The dangers some journalists face for taking on governments.
Many cartoonists have had to flee their countries because they were brave enough to take on regimes or political figures.
And we'll talk with VOA's Larry London about Miley Cyrus's latest hit single. It's all in today's International Edition. President Donald Trump has made an unannounced trip to Iraq to visit U.S. troops stationed there. The visit took place on the heels of Trump's controversial move to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria and plans for a drawdown in Afghanistan, and amid criticism that he has not visited troops abroad since becoming U.S. president. VOA White House correspondent Patty Whitaker-Swara reports.
President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump traveled to Iraq to visit troops the day after Christmas, Trump's first visit to a conflict zone as president.
We came to al-Assad to share our eternal gratitude for everything you do to keep America safe, strong, and free.
The secret trip took place in the midst of a partial government shutdown in Washington over funding for Trump's proposed wall on the southern border with Mexico. Last week, Trump made the controversial move of announcing plans to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria after claiming victory over the Islamic State. He also reportedly ordered the Pentagon to withdraw roughly half of the 14,000 American troops stationed in Afghanistan beginning next month. Military officials have warned withdrawal will plunge the region further into chaos. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and the Special Envoy to the Global Coalition Fighting Islamic State, Brett McGurk, have both resigned, citing differences over policy. Speaking to troops in Iraq, Trump defended his decision to withdraw from Syria, again claiming victory over the jihadist terrorist group.
2 years ago, when I became president, they were a very dominant group. They were very dominant. Today, they're not so dominant anymore.
The Iraq visit came one day after Trump wished a Merry Christmas to members of the U.S. military around the globe via video conference from the Oval Office. After the call, Trump was criticized by some media outlets that reported he is the first president since 2002 to not visit U.S. troops at Christmas time. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study from a pair of geophysicists proposes our current ice age, which began between 2.6 and 3.2 million years ago, may have been caused by a true polar wander, or a shift in the geological location of the Earth's poles. It's thought that this phenomenon could be caused when dense lumps of the Earth's mantle builds up in areas far from the equator. The study from researchers at Rice University in Texas suggests over the past 12 million years, this true polar wander has caused Greenland to move close enough to the North Pole to kick off what some call the Quaternary Ice Age. To reach their findings, the scientists analyzed fossil signatures in deep ocean sediment samples, the magnetic signature of oceanic crust, as well as the position of the mantle hotspot that created what are now the Hawaiian Islands. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Welcome back to VOA's International Edition. Indonesia continues search and rescue efforts following Saturday's deadly tsunami. Heavy rains are complicating efforts to provide aid to communities devastated by the giant wall of water. Officials say more than 429 people were killed, with another 1,500 injured. The International Red Cross is helping with relief efforts. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA, and she actually spoke earlier today with the IFRC in Geneva.
Indonesia is recovering from its latest tsunami as the nation marks the anniversary of its deadliest and most destructive disaster. On December 26, 2004, the worst ever recorded Indian Ocean quake and tsunami struck Asia. Nearly 250,000 people in 13 countries were killed, most in Indonesia. Important lessons have been learned from that long-ago disaster. These are now being applied by the emergency teams rushing in to provide aid and ease the plight of the survivors. Red Cross spokeswoman Laura Ingo-Fontaine tells VOA that colleagues on the ground report many survivors are huddling in temporary shelters away from the shore because they fear a rush of more tidal waves.
But they've started to emerge in search for loved ones and to assess damage to their property. And what we're seeing right now are a lot of people with broken bones and broken homes, and people are understandably very shaken and jittery because of this this disaster.
Ingo-Fontaine says the Federation is releasing more than $333,500 from its Disaster Relief Emergency Fund to help the Indonesian Red Cross scale up its response.
Our priorities right now are to ensure emergency medical relief, clean water, access to clean water. So the Red Cross, the Indonesian Red Cross, has deployed 14 water trucks. We are ramping up medical care, psychosocial support, sanitation services for about 7,000 people in the affected areas.
Ingo-Fontaine says the Red Cross also has deployed 2 helicopters to support search and rescue efforts before that window closes. The tsunami struck without warning, sweeping over popular beaches. It engulfed tourist hotels and coastal settlements. Authorities say the waves may have been caused by a massive underwater landslide that followed eruptions by Anak Krakatoa volcano. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For the latest on relief efforts in Indonesia, please visit us at voanews.com. The year 2018 proved to be one of change in U.S. politics. Opposition Democrats won back control of the House of Representatives in the November midterm elections, and that could have a profound impact on the next 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more.
Thanks to you, tomorrow will be a new day in America.
Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi celebrating the midterm results that returned the House to Democratic control. Democrats fueled their victory with opposition to President Donald Trump, spurred by a strong turnout of women and progressive voters on behalf of candidates like Massachusetts Democrat Ayanna Pressley.
We have affirmed that while this could go down as the darkest time in our history, we won't let it be. And instead, we will be defined by our hopes, not our fears.
Thank you very much. Please.
President Trump now faces the prospect of a stalled legislative agenda and numerous oversight investigations launched by House Democrats. But Trump remains defiant.
They got nothing. Zero. You know why? Because there is nothing. But they can play that game, but we can play it better.
The fact is, you do not have the votes in the House.
Nancy, I do. No. We need border security.
Trump and Democratic leaders have already clashed over funding for his border wall, a preview of the partisan fights to come, says analyst John Fortier.
Democrats will certainly use their majority to highlight some differences with Donald Trump and to investigate the Trump administration. And then we'll be spending this year leading into the presidential election of 2020. So it's a transition year.
Without full Republican control of Congress, Trump may be looking to cut some deals with Democrats, says Jim Kessler.
At this point, we have not seen Donald Trump really have the ability to work with Democrats to cut any sort of deal in the first 2 years. So Mr. Art of the Deal has really fallen short. We'll see if that is possible this time.
But the president will also have to deal with the Russia investigation, which may be moving toward a conclusion in the coming months. Veteran political analyst Tom DeFrank.
This is a watershed year coming up for President Trump. I mean, he's going to have to confront whatever it is that Robert Mueller says about him or alleges. And I think it's going to be a difficult year for him.
This election's about jobs and judges, borders.
Trump will be increasingly focused on the next presidential election. But so will scores of Democrats who hope to defeat him, says Guillen McKee.
You know, I think the reality is that the 2020 campaign has begun. That's probably unfortunate, but that shapes everything going forward.
Ours is the greatest political movement.
What happens in 2019 could go a long way to determining whether Donald Trump is a one-term or two-term president.
And thank you very much, everybody.
Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Politicians in the U.S. and around the world are often skewered in editorial cartoons. These political cartoons have been around as long as there's been political discord and dissent. In the U.S., they're a vibrant part of American culture and history, and no matter how controversial, are protected as free speech under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. VOA's Julie Tabo spoke with an American Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist about the current state of cartooning.
Matt Worker draws cartoons for a living. He's a staff cartoonist for Politico, an American political journalism outlet just outside Washington.
We're a strange mix of things in that we are making serious commentary on serious topics, but we're doing it not so seriously, and we get to draw our opinions with silly pictures.
The Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist says the main advantage of a political cartoon is being able to communicate an opinion very quickly.
I can draw a picture and put in a little word bubble, and you can read it in about 4 seconds, and you get it. It has to hit you in the face kind of hard and fast, and you know it when you've been hit.
In this cartoon, for example, Worker was inspired by an iconic image by American artist Norman Rockwell, reflecting a traditional scene of American culture. The cartoonist says over the years, his craft has evolved.
When I started 40 years ago doing cartoons, an editorial cartoon was a black and white single panel cartoon in a newspaper. And now cartoons can be color, they can be animated, they can be graphic novels that are political.
Like this 2018 Pulitzer Prize-winning work by journalist Jake Halper and illustrator Michael Sloan, currently on display at the museum in Washington. The series tells the story of two Syrian families' harrowing journey from their homeland to the U.S., where they settled as refugees in 2016. Patty Rule is vice president of exhibits at the museum.
Since the beginning of this country, editorial cartoons have been framing issues and framing debate from, you know, Ben Franklin, the live free or die, the segmented snake that rallied the 13 colonies together. So it's always been a part of this country and the world's way of freely expressing ideas and debate.
But free expression sometimes comes at a heavy price. In 2015, Islamic terrorists attacked the offices of Charlie Hebdo, a French satirical magazine, after it published unflattering cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. 12 people were killed in the attack, including several prominent cartoonists.
And within their culture, they're certainly entitled to be offended, but they're not entitled to decide that they're going to go to Paris and kill the people that created that cartoon. Many cartoonists have had to flee their countries because they were brave enough to take on regimes or political figures.
Worker hopes that in these troubled times, people will appreciate cartoons for what they are.
I think the good kind of political cartooning is something that slips in a really good political point with a certain amount of good humor and wit that people will process and hopefully won't make them angry, but will make them think.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
To see some of the political cartoons mentioned in the story, please visit voanews.com. You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You're tuned to International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel. I'm joined now by the host of VOA's Border Crossings, Larry London. Larry, I hear that Miley Cyrus has a new single climbing the charts.
Yes, Jim, she's back. It's been about a year since we heard from Miley, but she's now back and working with Mark Ronson on a new song that's on his upcoming album. It'll be Mark Ronson's fifth CD. It's called Late Night Feelings, which comes out in 2019. Mark Ronson is best known for Uptown Funk with Bruno Mars and Rehab with Amy Winehouse. He's a producer. He's been around for a number of years. Very talented guy, but it's Miley Cyrus's voice we hear and face we see in the video that she just filmed in South Africa. So let's check out the brand new single, Miley Cyrus and Nothing Breaks Like a Heart.
This world can hurt you. It cuts you deep and leaves a scar. Things fall apart, but nothing breaks like a heart. Nothing breaks like a heart. I heard you on the phone last night. We live and die by pretty lies. You know it. We both know.
Wow, that's a terrific song. I didn't really like it.
Well, she's got a powerful voice. Yeah. And, you know, it's a ballad, which is kind of unusual for her. She typically sings happy, upbeat party songs like Party in the USA. But she can do a ballad well also. And so there you have it. Nothing Breaks Like a Heart. And Miley Cyrus has had an interesting year. She lost her home in Malibu recently, as you recall in the news, the California fires that destroyed many houses. Her fiance, Liam Hemsworth, who's an Australian actor, she refers to him as a hero because she was in South Africa filming the video for the song when the fire was happening. He went back to their house to rescue her 7 dogs, 4 horses, 3 cats, and 2 pigs. And the two of them have been together, not the pig and Miley, but Liam and Miley, since 2012. And when she was asked in an interview recently about marriage, she said she's got big plans in 2019. So we shall see. Now, Miley's been famous for quite a number of years. She comes from a famous music family. She was on the Disney show Hannah Montana 12 years ago on the Disney Channel. She played a character named Miley Stewart, which is similar to her name Miley Cyrus, which is not her real name. Her real name is Destiny Hope Cyrus, but her dad named her Smiley as a kid. Billy Ray Cyrus called her Smiley because she was always happy and smiling. And so she adopted the name Miley for her TV character. She won the MTV Artist of the Year Award in 2013. The last album we had for Miley was 2017, called Younger Now. The new album coming up sometime in the next year will be her 7th album. And so the new song is called Nothing Breaks Like a Heart.
Larry London, always good to talk to you. Thanks so much. You can listen to Larry on Border Crossings Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC right here on VOA.
This world can
a big congratulations to Miley Cyrus and Liam Hemsworth, who, according to multiple media reports, were married last weekend. You're listening to International Edition. India's education system has long focused on academic achievement, but in an unusual initiative, the Delhi government has introduced a class of happiness in the city's public schools to turn the focus on emotional well-being. Educators hope the idea, influenced by its tiny neighbor Bhutan, will help reduce rising levels of stress and anxiety in a country that ranks low on the World Happiness Index. Anjana Pasricha visited a school in the Indian capital 5 months after the program was introduced to see how it is faring.
Good morning, sir. Welcome to...
Armed with a handbook for happiness, the teacher asks these sixth graders to close their eyes for a few minutes to learn how to spend time in the moment. Then he relates an inspirational story. Students participate enthusiastically. And soon it is time to move on to a fun activity, playing with a mock ball. After 5 months, the class of happiness that starts the day at public schools in Delhi has made school less stressful for many.
We had to immediately take out our books, concentrate on the blackboard, and try to grasp lessons. It was irritating to jump straight into studies. Now after the happiness class, I feel calmer and I can focus better on studies.
The happiness class will not lighten the pressure to get good grades. School bags, the symbol of a highly competitive system, are so heavy that the government recently introduced a weight restriction. The chase to make it to prestigious universities begins early.
After school, I study for a half hour, then attend coaching classes, then play for a while in the park, then study from 8 to 10, and then have dinner.
Delhi's education minister, who spearheaded the project in a rigid education system, hopes the new class will provide balance.
All over tension, all over burden, examination, anxiety, tension, then failure, success, all these keywords keep buzzing around in our minds, and there was no happiness at all.
The happiness class has no grades or tests. Besides providing tools to cope with stress, it also aims to inculcate values such as telling the truth or not stealing. The story this teacher relates encourages students, many of who come from disadvantaged backgrounds, to keep faith in themselves. 5 months on, Kidar Singh has noticed a change.
जब बच्चों ने झूठ बोलना थोड़ा कम किया है, बच्चे क्लास से बंक मारते थे, वो बंक.
They tell fewer lies. They have stopped skipping class. They sit down and focus better on studies. They also get less angry. They used to complain habitually to teachers about each other, but that has reduced.
पहले ज़्यादा शिकायतें आती थीं कि इसने मुझे मारा, इसने मुझे ये क्या, अब कम आती हैं.
Most educators agree that the focus on emotional well-being was long overdue for a generation coping with new challenges. The scale of the project makes Minister Sisodia optimistic.
The volume is the strength. 10 lakh students, 1 million students every morning in 20,000 classrooms sit together, do meditation, discuss about the happiness, discuss about the relationship, emotional science. It will help a lot in the society.
But educators caution that the project's success will depend on how individual teachers reach out to students. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
You're listening to International Edition. A group of young female business owners in Guinea-Bissau banded together to learn more about the business world and increase sales. A year later, their efforts are appearing to be paying off. Ricky Shyrock reports from the West African nation.
From street vendors to women who own their own shops, Adele Gomes likes to encourage young female entrepreneurs in Guinea-Bissau. Gomes is president of the Young Women Entrepreneurs Group in Bissau, the capital. She wants to encourage young women in the West African country to expand their businesses and become financially independent.
We created this association because we felt weak, so we wanted to gather together and everyone can bring their ideas together.
They are a small group of about 12 women who own a variety of businesses, from clothing design to event planning. December marks the group's one-year anniversary. The group organizes an annual exposition in Bissau to showcase their products. They also cross-promote each other's brands on social media.
My business has improved, and not just mine. People are more motivated to participate because the people participating are seeing improvements in their business.
Designer and group member Adele Dos Santos says her orders have increased too. Dos Santos, who has a daughter, says running a business and managing a household is challenging.
The biggest challenge is the management of our time, especially for us women. We don't want to just be limited to doing things at home. We want to express our knowledge outside the home as well.
According to the World Bank, nearly one-third of businesses in Guinea-Bissau are owned by women. Local economist Augusta Enriquez says that's why it's in the country's economic interest to support female entrepreneurs. But, she cautions, youth unemployment must also be addressed for the economy to grow. For now, the young women entrepreneurs hope they can help each other carry the load. Ricky Shryock for VOA News, Bissau, Guinea-Bissau.
And you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app. Thanks for joining us, and our thanks to director Dan Brown, and a special thank you to Suli Terawali, who is spending his final day with us before retiring from VOA. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Thanks for being with us.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
When it comes to TV, the rules have always been straightforward. Programmers provide content, and you watch it. But now, interactive TV is giving viewers a starring role.
Instead of there just being one story, you could actually change the arc of the story by making choices that send the story in different directions.
New York-based startup Echo is doing just that with their interactive videos.
We developed a platform that allows for viewers to interact with live-action video.
So when Jill, the main character in one of Echo's shows, runs into a guy at a party and can't remember his name or how they met, viewers can choose for her.
Do you remember the first time I told you that I wanted to be an animal chiropractor?
Oh, duh, I remember. It was when we...
What's interesting here, you see kind of two types of people. There's the people who will click when swimming at the beach because they're trying to help her succeed. And there's the people who start a dumpster fire at Planned Parenthood or something because they're basically, they want to see how bad this can go.
Proponents of interactive TV say it's similar to the engagement and control players have in video games. Whether or not it'll resonate with viewers will depend on who's watching.
Among younger audiences, I think you'll see increasing willingness to experiment.
Big names have begun experimenting with the interactive format.
It's still early, but when you see players like Netflix and Walmart that are starting to put real money and real time into this, I wouldn't be surprised if a few years from now we started calling this the next big thing.
Just like the old saying goes, viewers will have to stay tuned. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Tom.